you have to just go really bit by bit. You start with the water and you start to give them some supplements to help them with what they're actually lacking. And then slowly the water will start opening up some paths of energy very gently, and then you start introducing another element and then something else. And then very slowly the awareness starts to come in. And
welcome to the Alcohol and Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I am not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone that doesn't drink alcohol, and I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same, like right now. Okay, folks, it seems like an eternity since I spoke to you all, but probably it's not. It's about a week, right? What have I got to say? On a personal note, I'm still in Los Angeles. I was supposed to fly out of here on back end of February, but my daughter got a little bit sick. She had some ulcers and a 100-degree fever for a week. She's only 3 and a half, so we couldn't stick her on a plane in that condition, so we had to cancel. We're going to fly back to the UK the end of March. We're going to stay there until around August, I think, and then we're going to fly back to America to celebrate Zia's 4th birthday. And I think that's going to be my last big stint in the UK, I think. I'm pretty settled now in my head that, you know, America's the place that I want to be, and I want to be living, and I will travel back and forth to the UK about 4 or 5 times a year to see my boy, who is doing fantastic, by the way. Jude, he's 19 now. He's just got an apprenticeship with Deloitte. So he is going to be starting next week. I'm really, really super proud of him. And let's hope that he comes over to Los Angeles and works with him, because I know they've got an office here, right? We can only hope. So that's what's happening at the moment, okay? Now, I might be repeating myself, but I'm getting old. What can I say? I can't remember a lot of stuff. Happy one-year Strive anniversary to Kim, okay? So Kim's been with us a year, so thank you for all your loyal service, Kim. Happy two-year Strive anniversary to Anna. And it's also Anna's two-year sober anniversary. So 2 years without drinking a single drop of alcohol. Anna, you are a legend. And Craig, talking about legends, Craig is, if Anna's a legend, then we'll have to call Craig a super legend, because he has actually gone 1,000 days sober. And when your brand is called 1,000 days sober, that's really important. So Craig joins the 1K day sober club. And it's amazing. I was looking at these guys and gals. I was looking at their introductions to Strive when they first came on, and seeing how much they've grown and how much they've developed, you know. And what's really important is Craig, Kim and Anna, they all joined at different stages of their sobriety. You know, like Kim, for example, began on like day one. She was here and she was like, right, day one. Craig came and he was already 18 months sober, right? In addition to that, I want to give a shout out to Sue. Sue, who's been with us the longest of any of us Striver. She joined in August 2017. She's currently closing in on 200-day milestone, okay? And also, let's remember and say well done to the likes of Nicola and Polly, who have only just joined, and they're still oscillating and battling between day 0 and day 10, okay? And what reason I'm saying all this is it's really important to understand, if you're just listening on the podcast and you're not a member of Strive, that people come here for all different reasons, okay? And the Strive model for change, which has been molded on James Prochaska's work with his book, Changing for Good, and his his 6 stages of change. The reason that is really important is it because it allows us to provide education, resource, experience, and support at the right place at the right time for people. So if you are Nicola and Polly right now, we're not pushing you to stop drinking alcohol. We don't want that to be your goal. We want your goal to just continue to think about why you're drinking. Think about why you're drinking. Think about the effect that it's having on your life. And we have course content to help them with that. We have a support network to help them with that. But we're not pushing them to take any action, you know? And then you've got people like Sue and Kim, who are really going for it. They're in the initiative phase and they're taking a lot of action. They're doing a lot of work. They're doing a lot of assignments. They're doing a lot of work in Strive. They're doing a lot of work outside of Strive with different sobriety groups and different sobriety platforms as well. And And it's all working for them and it's really helping them. And then you've got people like Anne and you've got people like Craig who, for them, like alcohol is in the rear view window. And Anna and Craig have developed into Strive ambassadors. And now they are actually putting back. They're actually helping other people to become people that don't drink alcohol. And what people like Kim, Anna, Craig, and now Sue have in common at that end of the scale. And everybody else who joins them, your likes of Nikki, your likes of Andrew, your likes of Stella, is what they do is they make this thing about giving up drinking much bigger than themselves, okay? They turn it into a quest for epic meaning and calling. They turn around and say, well, hang on a minute. I want to be a role model for my kids. I want to be a role model for my kids' friends. I want to be a role model for my family. I just want to be a freaking role model, right? And if alcohol kills 3.3 million people a year, then the people at Strive are helping reduce that number, right? So it's like this, it's a bigger thing at Strive, right? And the Strive model for change is the framework that allows that to happen, okay? Now, we're going to be discussing that model and the April edition of the Strive Sobriety System. We only run the Strive Sobriety System 4 times a year, which means you can only join Strive 4 times a year, right? And we're going to be opening the doors in April. And running from now up until April, I'm going to be hosting a Zoom call as often as I can every Friday at 11 o'clock Pacific time. And this Friday, March 6th, I will be there 11 o'clock Pacific time. So head over to www.1000daysober.com to sign up for that webinar. It's a Zoom webinar, right? And if you can't make that Zoom webinar, then still sign up anyway, because you will get access to the weekly Striver, which is our weekly newsletter, and you'll get early bird information around our weekly webinars and our continual change and evolution into the 1000 Days Sober branding and program that we're creating with the Strive Model for Change and the Strive Sobriety System, okay? The other thing you could do for me, if you are so kind, is to rate and review this podcast. If you can just go to your podcast player after you finish and just rate and review it, I really appreciate it. It helped pump us up the charts a little bit and it will help spread the word about the work we're doing and we can save more lives, right? So if you could do that, it'd be fantastic. And also join Instagram. I've turned into the king of Instagram. Nah, not really. More of a kind of like, I don't know, what is lower than a king? Prince, but even lower than that. I'm on the Instagram ladder. I'm starting to hit Instagram hard. Anna, who works for us from Serbia, she's really doing a good job at kind of taking over that right now and remolding it to make it look really nice. That there is a conversation that we're having. You don't have to pay any subscription, right? So if you're short a dosh, you're short of money, you don't want to join the site's Drive Sobriety System in April, then get over to Instagram, 1000 Days Sober, and you can join the conversation there. Okay, right, on to my next guest. My next guest is Laura Boutre-Lodge. Laura is from Normandy in France and has been living in Cardiff in Wales for over 20 years with her family. She draws inspiration from yoga, running, music and nature. And she wanted to understand her own body better following recurring bladder infection and skin condition issues. So she decided to obtain a qualification in naturopathic nutrition at the School of Naturopathic Nutrition in Cardiff. And the course enabled her to improve her health and stamina. And she discovered while she was doing this training to make water kefir. Now, if you are somebody who doesn't drink alcohol and you're looking for non-alcoholic alternatives, then water kefir and kombucha are excellent, excellent alternatives, right? So Laurie started making this water kefir and then her friends and her family liked it. And then she decided to create a company called Absorb. And now if you're in the Cardiff area and you're around the farmers markets on the weekends or the many events they have in Cardiff for health and wellness, you'll see a little Absorb stand. It was founded in July 17th. And now Laurie provides and sells products such as water kefir and runs courses and seminars and does one-to-one tuition and all that kind of stuff. And I actually saw Laurie doing a talk on gut health during an event in Cardiff. And I loved her enthusiasm. I thought her knowledge of what she was talking about was amazing. And I thought that, wow, this is a woman who has a lot to offer people who are struggling drinking alcohol. So I invited her onto the show. So I hope you enjoy what she has to offer. We're going to get her on again in the future to have more dialogue with her because, you know, 1 hour is not enough to really get into everything that we wanted to get into. But I love talking to her. I hope you do too. So without further ado, I'll leave you in the capable hands of Laurie Boutre-Lodge. Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. Today, my guest is Laure Boutre-Lodge. How are you doing, Laure?
I'm good, yeah. I'm fab. Fabulous, yeah. Well, it's been a day's work, all day's work, but it's okay.
Yeah, because of course, it's nighttime for you now and here it's daytime. You say you've had a full day's work today. What does a day's work look like for you?
Well, it's really looking after the business. You know, I'm a naturopath, so I see one-to-one clients, and I run a little business called making water kefir. So I prepare for weekends. You know, markets. I have a few markets, and I also have to supply some little shops and cafes. So putting the orders in and preparing all that. So yeah, it's pretty busy, and a few workshops as well that I run. So preparing for that.
Which is where I met you.
Yes, was it a talk? Yeah,
you were doing a talk in Cardiff near the
City Hall.
In City Hall, yeah.
Yeah.
You talk, yeah. And it was excellent. I'm somebody who suffers a lot with gut issues, so it's really, really fascinating for me. But before we get on to that, a little bit about your backstory. Where you're living in Cardiff right now, but you're obviously not Welsh. Where did you grow up, and how did you end up moving to Cardiff?
Yeah, I'm French. I'm actually from Normandy. And my background originally is economics, and but I actually grew up in my parents are very close to, you know, nature on the ground, and they grow their own veg, and they're kind of nearly self-sufficient. They've got the chickens, and they just only use local farms, and grow all their veg. So and I always grew up with naturopathy, so I never used to go to the GP or anything like that. Just, really like down to traditions and working with the land. And so I came to the UK more like as part of my economics. I did an exchange and I ended up in Cardiff. And then for 2014, I started this course in naturopathic nutrition with a school here in Wales. And I wanted to become a naturopath, but I also started to make this fermented drink. I learned about fermented foods. I was really fascinated. And then I just started to make some for the course. And then the people there, they really liked it every time we were gathering. And they were like, oh, can you make some more? And can I buy you some? And then someone started to say you should develop a brand. And then I developed like a little range of flavors, did my food hygiene certificate to be able to go to markets. And and there I am. I'm just doing this. So I did bring a little bottle here.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
one has got a tag, but for shops, I have got a label that sort of sticks around. And I do smaller bottles for like the health shops and things like that. But the good thing with the tags is you can also recycle the bottles, and so the customers, do some refills. So. Mm-hmm. They get better deals as well with reusing bottles. I've got a nice range of flavors like ginger and lemon, lavender, blackcurrant, and original, and peppermint. And I do flavor of the months as well. So depending on the seasons, I like to invent some new mixtures, some new portions, and that help people throughout these transition, these new seasons. So
and for people who are not aware, what is naturopathy?
So naturopathy is it's like a holistic way of, so usually a naturopath is a nutritionist to start with, so we know quite well about diet, but it's wider than that, because it's basically, naturopathy means nature's cure. So it's really about a whole body therapy. And we look at not only the nutrition, but also the physical, the mental, and the spiritual state of the client. And that can really influence, the way they can absorb nutrition, you know, nutrients as well, you know, and whether they're connected, whether they've got a better an awareness of what's happening with their bodies and their mind, and usually that's what we find nowadays, is that people just rely on a GP to suppress a symptom, you know, as opposed to trying to understand the root cause of, you know, why things have developed in, you know, the way the, you know, you are now with all these. So we look at all the, it's like we look into a case, it's like a case history. So if you go to a GP, you're going to talk to him for like 5-10 minutes maximum in the UK. I don't know about the States, but and how do they know? They don't know anything about you, and they prescribe you with a pill that, you know, is supposed to sort everything out. But, you know, what about the side effects? What about, you know, what about, they don't know anything about you, about your life, about, you know. And so naturopathy is much more about understanding the individual and tailor-making a program that's really designed for that particular person. And it's also for that person to learn more about themselves, about how they got to that point. And it's reversing, trying to reverse it. But obviously it's very slow, because sometimes they get to a point very slowly, you know, and it could have been from a habit that started 10, 15 years ago, and very slowly is going deeper and deeper in the body, and then starting to express itself in little symptoms, like it could start to be, you know, on the skin, or like little things that are originally acute, and then they become chronic, and then it becomes a vicious circle. And then I would say that a GP's the GP would give you is like a life jacket to enable you to ignore those symptoms or make them disappear. But what happens really in the body is that it actually goes deeper, and then it can go more and more serious. And I think why naturopathy might have had a bad saying about it is because those people don't have that patience or are disconnected with their own selves to try and understand the root cause and trying to reverse and understand where. And you start with introducing some really basic things. And it's a whole process, and it can take 6 months to a year, 2 years, 3 years. You know, I myself was suffering with loads of cystitis, and it was becoming bladder infections, and it was becoming also chronic. And the GP, they're starting to put me on loads of antibiotics, and that was way before I started naturopathy. And you know, that wasn't going to solve my problem, really, because they were going to put me on that for forever, you know, without, you know. So as soon as I started naturopathy and learning how to cure myself, it took, you know, 2 to 3 years until I really completely managed to control it. I understood how, you know, the whole concept of the naturopathy, really. And sometimes it's not just by taking just supplements. There's a whole load of other things, because you can take supplements, but if you're like too stressed or too disconnected with some stuff, you might not absorb those extra supplements that you're taking. So it's quite an in-depth therapy, and it takes an hour and a half, the first session, at least an hour and a half. And the first hour is just talking about the subject, the individual, really looking at all the symptoms from head to toes. Any little thing can actually give us an idea, because we also link our knowledge with Chinese medicine. So there's all the seasonal and, you know, the elements. So the elements and the chakras. And so there's a lot of things that we take into account that gives us a really good picture of the person and where we can work in, you know, emotional sides, as well as certain foods that can help, releasing those emotional issues. And And then there's a lot of coaching, you know, like getting these people to really change their habits. And it's really, that's why you need time. You really need time. And people would say, you know, because I used to say, oh, I'm drinking enough water, for example, which is the basic. And then when my naturopath said, well, actually, how much do you drink? And I'm less. So when I was actually calculating, it was actually coming up to 1 liter, which is way not enough. You know, for your body, you need to drink at least 2 liters, which is like 4 pints of water a day. And then there's the quality of the water. There's the time when you take it. You know, you don't take 1 liter at a time. You know, all these kind of things. And it's just like, yeah, just really basic stuff at the beginning. But, you know, people completely forget about those basic things. But these are basics that our body needs.
Yeah, I think for people listening, where Law talks about root cause, pardon me, I think that's really super important. Like, I take level thyroxine for a thyroid issue right now. And the GP and in the NHS in the UK, they're just expecting me to take this for life, which is, you know, it's not great for me. It's not great for the national health system as well, because it's costing them a lot of money to keep giving me these tablets. But nobody in the system is interested in finding out why I developed hypothyroid, and so I can do something about it to get off the medication. And it's the same with alcohol, folks. You know, like, we always need to be looking for the root cause behind why we drink, and not just, you know, try to deal with, don't just try to stop drinking. You know, and that's why we talk a lot about, you know, the belief systems behind drinking alcohol. And Law talked a little bit about habits and the importance of habits and same type of thing. What are some of the problems that you're seeing coming up quite a lot in Cardiff when people come to you and they start talking to you about their life? What are some of the similar themes that you're picking up that people? Either they're involved in habits, or they're eating something, or they're drinking something. What are they doing that is kind of familiar to you that is leading to them being sick?
That tends to be, this first thing about the hydration. So their energy is really low. Most of the time they have like these moments of really dipping in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, you know, usually after work, you know, like, pikes of energy in the day, and they do tend to forget all the basics about you know, just drinking water, but also like when we're talking about dehydration, it's not just about actually water in itself, it's about, you know, an anti-inflammatory diet. So like there's all this hype about veganism, for example. But you can eat a lot of stuff that is really bad for your health in veganism, you know, like you have a lot of really bad fats, a lot of high level of sugars, you know, soya is not always a good source of protein, actually, because it's very, you know, well, the GM, and it's, you know, it's not always a very good quality. And so, you know, you don't necessarily, they don't really necessarily understand that there is, you know, what is actually going to be. I mean, there's a lot of stress as well with work and things like that, and really reconnecting with themselves. I'm just trying to think of all the cases I've got recently, but there's a lot of like autoimmune issues, you know, and this is where autoimmune is when. Actually, the gut has become porous, has become a leaky gut. And after a while, because when we're younger, we drink alcohol, we eat so much sugar. I mean, I used to eat a lot of sugar, and I used to say, oh, that's fine, you know, nothing's happening to me. But when now I'm in my 40s, and I realized that, you know, nobody actually told me about, you know, the warning me about, you know, how inflammatory sugar can be in your gut. And then that's how you start developing this porous gut and then leaking. And then your body is attacking itself, basically, in the areas where you might have had some kind of trauma in the past. And then it can be obviously the brain, you know, that's where there is a link there as well between the brain and the gut. So usually a lot of things actually revolve around the issue of, you know, having had a poor diet, being younger, or having had a lot of antibiotics. Antibiotics, you say that in the States. Yes, antibiotics.
Don't forget, just because I'm in the States, I'm still a Cardiffian.
But they're same in the UK as well. They do, you know, prescribe or used to prescribe a lot of antibiotics to kids and things. And obviously that just wipes the whole, you know, good bacteria and then stops, you know, weakens the protection within the gut. And very slowly again, bad, you know, toxins will start infiltrating into the blood flow and attacking certain areas of our bodies and without us noticing at the beginning. You know, it could be a bit of arthritis, it could be, you know, the memory loss, and then and then suddenly it will just escalate when we, you know, start getting older. In general, this is what it is. And even, you know, with alcohol, some people think they don't drink, they drink a bit, but it still, I think it still affects, you know, even a small amount of alcohol can have a big impact on the digestive system. Yeah,
you talked about hydration. So you're saying we should drink 2 liters of water a day. It's like 11:20 here right now in the morning. I've had a big jug of lemon water when I got up. And typically now, if I'm being honest, I'm going to do a bit of work here on a computer for the next couple of hours, and I'm going to go to Starbucks. I'll probably have a decaf coffee, and then I won't have any more water until I come home this evening, right? Now I got to drink 2 liters. I'm on it. That's going to be my new habit. But you said something interesting about not drinking at the same time. So I'm the type of guy, I'd say, I've got to drink a liter right now. Like, how do we know individually when we should be drinking water throughout the day?
So the best thing really is to spread it out. So we're talking 2 liters is about 4 pints, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you would drink first thing in the morning when you wake up, which is good. You said you're drinking a bit of lemon water, which is nice. You can have half a pint of that. That's fine. Just to open up your digestive system with, the lemon is actually really alkalinizing for the body. And then you would drink a pint in the middle of the morning. So halfway through your morning, have a pint away from your digestion. Again, it just helps hydrating your body in a nice way where you haven't had food in between. And then half a pint before your lunch time, which is nice, again, to prepare your intestines to receive the food you're going to have. But again, not with your meal, because what you're doing, if you're drinking too much water with your meal, you're really drowning all the food and making it harder on your stomach to.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting you say that, because most people, they'll prepare a meal and they'll have water with the meal, or if not water, some drink. And that to me, like, that is, I went out last night for a meal and it's like, what do you want to eat? What do you want to drink? And you're saying try to stay clear of the liquids with your food?
Well, you could have a little glass of a kefir or
meal.
That will just help you digest. But have a small glass of water and have a few sips, you know.
Some of the food
you're eating is very drying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have another pint in the middle of the afternoon. And then half a pint before your dinner. And then again, another half pint at bedtime. Again, it's good for the system to just, you know, have a bit. So obviously people will start going, oh my God, but I'm going to go peeing all the time.
That's me. Yeah.
Exactly. So this means that your body cells are not actually holding that water, that hydration properly. And what happens in our cells, there's a membrane, and in there there's oils, so they call essential fatty acids. And these oils are the ones that make that water flow in and out and enabling the electrolytes to work, and then therefore your energy, you know, all your cells to move around properly. And when you're feeling tired, those electrolytes are not working properly. So I'm talking magnesium, calcium, sodium and potassium. And that they function as a pump, and they, when they go in, you know, it's bedtime and you feel asleep, and then when they go out, it's the morning, so that's the magnesium coming out. And if you are, for example, feeling really tired in the morning, it would mean that the magnesium and these electrolytes are not functioning properly. So on top of the good the water, and I mean, I was talking also about quality of water.
Yeah, you see,
some tap water can be very acidic. So we're talking about pH of over 7. So I don't know what it's like in the US, but here in Cardiff is 6.8. So it's always nice to filter it and add, you know, things like lemon or get some spring water if you can. And they tend to be waters with a 7 pH, basically, to increase, you know, your pH level. And then making sure that in your diet you have the right fats, you know, so the good fats, the omega-3. So you'd think first thing the omega-3 is fish, but what does fish eat? Why are fish rich in omega-3s? Because yeah. they eat seaweed, eat plankton. So the top range of omega-3 would be seaweed, really, adding seaweed to your diet.
I got dulse flakes in my smoothie.
Oh, wow.
Huh?
Yeah, they don't taste great, though.
It's all right when I got a bit of fruit in there. You can taste the edge of it, but I wouldn't eat it on its own.
Yeah. When I eat, you could do like a smoothie with spirulina and chlorella, have a mix of that. But the first thing I take is flax seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you soak them, they need to be soaked to release the linoleic acids, which is these acids that will be turned into EPA and DHA.
I never soak my flax seeds.
Yeah, if you don't soak them, they either need to be soaked or grounded. Otherwise, you won't get the omega-3 from them. But there's other things like walnuts, chia seeds. Mm. And again, they need to be soaked to make sure, you know, you release the omega from them. And then you can also have the oils, you know, the flax oil or the linseed oil. Hemp oil is really high in omega-3. So there's loads of really good oils around that can be added to dressing with your salads and things. But trying to have a couple of tablespoons of that every day is really important.
Okay.
So these are the kind of basics to hold the hydration in your body. And after that, what the naturopathy looks at is the diet. So trying to have an alkaline, anti-inflammatory diet, you know, rather than inflammatory things. So things like coffee, coffee is a pH of 4 to 5. So that's why, I mean, the Italians, they always have a glass of water with their coffee. Yeah? So if you drink a small espresso, you really should be drinking next to that a pint of water, really, because you're just increasing that dehydration process in your body. And then there's loads of other foods that are really, you know, dehydrating and inflammatory, and that the gut is struggling with.
What do you think about garlic and onions? Because I find when I eat garlic and onions, it dehydrates me, but at the same time, when I read about it, garlic is really good for you. So what's happening there?
Yeah, you could have a sensitivity. I mean, garlic and onions are part of the nightshades. So, you know, you can be sensitive. Same with tomatoes and peppers. Mm. So some people can be quite sensitive to them. I mean, the good thing with them, they're high as well in sulfur. But you might need to take, a small supplement of sulfur and avoiding them for a while
And it looks like, you know, you could have an intolerance to that. And it would be, if you have a reaction, I would try and avoid it. Mm. Even though, and find another way of, you know, finding, you know, you've got things like echinacea that can be good for the immunity. Are you talking about the immune system with garlic and reinforcing your immune?
I know it sounds really odd, but when I stopped drinking, so when I used to drink alcohol, and I had a hangover, my experience of having a hangover, I connected it 100% to just the alcohol. But when I stopped drinking alcohol, there are two things that have happened to me that resemble a hangover. One, if I do extreme exercise, like tomorrow I'm going to see my personal trainer, and if I push myself too hard during that time, the feelings that I get afterwards are like I've got a hangover, and I think that must be partly related to hydration. And the other thing is garlic. Like, I'll eat garlic, and then the next day I'll feel like I've got an hangover. Like, I feel like I need to drink like lots of water.
Yeah, yeah.
So both of them.
Definitely, it could be hydration, but it could also be linked with the liver, because obviously people who have been drinking a lot of alcohol can have, the fatty liver issue, or, you know, and obviously when you're doing sports, you're sort of detoxifying a little bit your liver. So you might need a bit of support on that side as well. And also you say, do you drink a lot of coffee, for example? Because
I was going to ask you about the coffee, but before I go into the coffee, I just want to circle back to the alcohol, and then I'll go into coffee. So you've given us, a lot of advice there on water. You know, just to recap, you said like 2 liters a day. You give us a good plan about spacing that out, about the importance of not drinking too much of it while you're eating and actually drinking it before and just taking sips during. You also talked about the quality of the water. My wife, actually, she has a little bottle of electrolytes that she adds to water she got from a health store. And then you talked about different types of foods that can dehydrate you and that kind of thing. But what about alcohol? Like, where does alcohol fit into this? Because, alcohol dehydrates you, right? So, like, what's happening when you drink alcohol?
I was going to talk to you about the gut microbiome in, like, you know, the bacteria that we have in the gut. We're talking like 100 trillions of bacteria.
Yeah.
So it's basically 10 bacteria for one of our body cell. So we've got 1 to 2 kilos of bacteria in our gut, and they live as a community. This is the gut microbiome. And they work together to absorb what we eat, to eliminate to the waste that we've, you know, generated from the foods we've eaten. But they also manufacture vitamins, like really important vitamins, like some B vitamins. And one of the big vitamins that is a big issue, I believe, in people who drink alcohol is the B12.
Okay.
Because it's a vitamin that we have to reproduce ourselves. It's not something that you don't find it that much in many foods, but you do find it in a lot of fermented foods. So actually, water kefir and kombucha and these kind of things, you will find some B12. But the alcohol actually destroys that faculty of that ability of people to actually manufacture these B12, and these B12 are really important for the oxygenation of the blood cells. They're part of this link with, you know, the iron and the oxygen, and B12 is really crucial in also memory and mental and appetite and all these signs. They can be an important things in terms of deficiency, and I think that has a massive impact on a lot of men's health. I mean, in naturopathy, I studied a lot of, you know, men's health. I did a thing on men's health. I was quite fascinated with this. And in the UK, men drink a lot of alcohol and beer. I meant to say beer.
Yeah.
And I noticed, you know, they always develop like a little belly, you know, pot.
A little belly. big belly.
And some of them are still fit and everything, but they still have this pot. But that's the only thing that they're still drinking is alcohol, is the beer.
Yeah.
So, and I do think that it's linked with that, you know, the fact that some of the nutrients are not absorbed properly and some of those B vitamins are not manufactured properly and things are not shifting properly within their body.
Mm.
The other one is the vitamin K that those bacteria produce. So vitamin K, we can find the vitamin K in a lot of green veg, you know, the green leafy veg, but obviously I know a lot of men who don't like green veg. Again, the alcohol is going to have that vicious circle of not helping to produce more and become deficient. And vitamin K is setting, you know, calcification of the bone. Calcification is really important, but also for blood clotting. And you find in the 60s a lot of men start having thrombosis and blood clots and things like that. Mm. And I do believe that there is a link there between the gut and those conditions, and the fact that, you know, alcohol might have been one of these things that have influenced those symptoms. You know, obviously it's difficult. You need to see case by case. You can't just generalize.
I know. I know what you're saying, like on a case by case basis. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But I mean, being someone who grew up in the Welsh Valleys, it's highly unusual for you to see a man in his 40s who doesn't have a big fat belly, right? It's normal. It's when you look at it, if you look where I lived in Ogmore Valley, for example, if you look, there's hardly any fresh produce anymore. The shops don't sell any decent food. There's no restaurants up there other than takeaways. So, and everybody spends their entire time in the pub. So what happens is a guy wakes up, has some breakfast, generally fried eggs on toast, goes to the pub, drinks 6 to 12 pints, goes to the Chinese restaurant, gets some Chinese takeaway. You know, that's your life. People aren't cooking with good food because they don't have it there, you know? So, I definitely think like this, you know, there's a cultural thing there for sure. What was I going to ask you? The other thing that comes out for me, and one thing that I've learned, I'm certainly learning right now, is the big difference between eating what you need and eating. So, you know, we know we have to eat because we're going to die. We know we have to drink, otherwise we're going to die. So we all drink some water, right? Like we know we have to drink some water. Vast majority of us don't drink anywhere near enough. But when it comes to eating, lately, like last night, I went out, daughter's recital, and we ended up going to a pizza joint, which is not the greatest place. And I had a vegan pizza. But at the same time I had a vegan pizza, I ordered a salad and I ordered vegetables.
Yeah.
Now, I would never have done that before in the past, but I'm now saying to myself, no, I know my body needs this.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But people don't do that, do they? Normally, it's just like, what's for tea, ma'am? you're just looking in the fridge and you're just making something on a whim. You're not really eating what you need. How can people make that switch?
It's having developing with food, not only also looking at taste, but trying to think of something you eat, trying to understand where it comes from. You know, that it's been freshly, I'm sure there must be some growers around the valleys, some people who have allotments. And I mean, I know when they come to Cardiff, the Cardiff market, there's this always two or three veg stalls, and it's all organic, and some come from Abergavenny and some from West Wales. And I mean, and even in supermarkets nowadays, you start finding organic. I mean, I'm into organic as well because I avoid, you know, pesticides. I think they do have they will destroy as well some of your gut bacteria, but is trying to stop to, I mean, yeah, looking at your fridge and trying to make something out of it is actually great, but you do need to add some ingredients and try to understand the flavors and that relationship you have with food, basically. I guess those people you know, would need a bit of coaching. Or
it's really difficult, though.
Inspiration, yeah.
I just asked you an impossible question, really, because, you know, if I sit down with somebody and talk about alcohol and my views around alcohol, you know, because I actually believe that we're all designed to drink alcohol from birth, and the reason that we drink alcohol is that there is a belief system that exists that is very invisible, and it says that drinking alcohol is normal and drinking alcohol is pleasurable. Whereas, you know, it's quite obvious with statistics that it's not normal to drink a poison that kind of like affects your body in all these negative ways at all. It's just we've normalized it. And similarly with food, like, so if I was to sit down and talk to my dad, for example, about alcohol, he's not going to be able to hear what I'm saying. If I was to sit down to my dad and talk to him about food, because my dad's just gone into hospital to have x-rays because he has a big stomach. Right. And he's a diabetic and he eats so much sugar. He does everything he shouldn't do. But if I talk to him about food and say, hey, dad, like, you know, why don't we have a think about, you know, what the earth is giving us naturally? Maybe we could eat someone else. My dad won't be able to hear me because to him, it's the pain of actually going to buy organic stuff and cooking it. Yeah. For him, that is more painful than going through what pain he's currently going through, which for most of people like my dad, it might be he has to go to the toilet every now and then, or he feels a bit sluggish. But it's not until the doctor turns around and says, you've got cancer or you've got an autoimmune disease, or that people wake up and say like, oh, I need to change what I'm doing. Like, it's so sad. Like,
yeah. I mean, in some cases where you find it really, you have to just go really bit by bit. You start with the water. You start to give them some supplements to help them with what they're actually lacking. And then slowly the water will start opening up some paths of energy very gently. And then you start introducing another element and then something else. And then very slowly, the awareness starts to come in. And if that person starts to feel better, and what I think with like fermented drinks, I think they're amazing in terms of reducing alcohol because they actually have the probiotics in there. They're really low in sugar, so they're fine for diabetic people or people with conditions like candida, you know, there are overgrowth in their bodies. And that actually has got a good bacteria in there that is going to fight and rebalance your system very slowly and make you actually start drinking a bit less and less, very slowly as well. And then in the end, your body starts to reject naturally the alcohol and thinking, well, actually, I don't need this anymore. It's a bit like, you know, the ones who eat too much meat or the ones who eat too much sugar. You know, if you manage to find something that, you know, you realize your body, you're actually nourishing your body better with it, and you're finding that you're feeling better, you're finding you've got better energy, then, you know, you are going to understand that, you know, suddenly you're going to have that awareness, that shift. But it's trying to, I mean, even for a person to come to a naturopath is already means that that person has had that little shift in awareness, in wanting to make a change. But it can take years. And sometimes, in all the people who have got that, you know, those habits and really think that GPs are everything and stuff like that, there's not much. It's really hard to turn around, you know, and they're doing these kind of podcasts and people just starting to listening to those kind of conversations, that's a little seed that you're planting that might evolve in a few weeks' time in them thinking, oh, actually, you know, they're not that crap, these naturopaths.
I mean, just to let you know, Laura, like there's never been as much resource out there for people who want to recover from alcohol addiction than there is today. So many people are jumping on the mindful drinking, controlled drinking, moderately drinking. Here at Strive, the work we do, we just rebranded 1,000 Days Sober. So we're going to help people to go 1,000 Days Sober, which is 2.7 years. Our belief is you don't drink any alcohol, like zero. No. Every single bit you drink is destroying your body in one way or another, and you don't need it. And every reason you say that you need alcohol, there will be a natural replacement that will provide you with much more value than the alcohol you're currently drinking at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, for people who have got what we call an addiction, you know, it's the same with smoking or...
Sugar.
Sugar,
yeah.
You have to completely stop, really, because otherwise, if as soon as they start again, it's a bit like vampires, you know, a little taste of it, and they'll just go the other way around. So, you know, I mean, I'm a moderate consumer of all these things, and I know how to, you know, control myself. But yeah, those people, I would say, definitely would need probiotics to help them to start with, I would say. As a background.
What is your view on coffee and what is your view on decaffeinated coffee?
Whether it's caffeinated or decaf, I was talking to you about the pH. So I was talking about, so pH is dehydrating and inflammatory. So whether it's got the caffeine or not, it's still going to have a very low pH.
Right.
You know, so... I don't, I mean, and there's the caffeine itself, like the trigger of, you might be able to sleep better in the night and things like that because, yeah, the caffeine. I mean, I would say, you know, not to drink coffee until no later than lunchtime, like midday, 1 p.m., so that you can have a good night's sleep. But if it's, yeah, coffee will still be dehydrating. That's for sure. So, and I mean, a lot of people, they really struggle with coffee because to give up, because what the coffee does is it narrows the blood vessels. And as soon as you stop, your blood flow will start going stronger and you start having headaches. And if you don't manage and you think, oh, I've got these headaches, do you need more coffee? You think you need more coffee, but actually it's because your body is starting to detoxify. And it's like, you know, it's like, so you're going through this state of, like, you know, when you're trying to stop drugs or alcohol or whatever, but it's because naturally those blood cells are trying to widen up again, you know, the ends of in your brain mainly and stuff like that. And you think, oh no, I can't go through that, but you have to give it like, you know, a week or, you know, a bit of time to then manage to completely stop.
You're nicer than me, Law. Whenever someone comes to me and says, oh, you know, I've got a bit of a problem. I've got withdrawal symptoms from coffee or I've got withdrawal symptoms for alcohol. And I want to put a caveat in here. I know that you can die withdrawing from alcohol, right? What I'm saying is the people who come to Strive are not going to die if they withdraw from alcohol. I don't attract those people. And if I do, I shoo them away to the nearest doctor, right?
Yeah,
Whenever they come to me and say, oh, this is really tough because of the withdrawal symptoms, I just say to them, as I say to my daughter when she falls over, just sort it out. You know, like you've got an headache or you feel a little bit shivery, like you've got a cold. Get over it. You know, it's like it's not going to last too long. Don't use it as an excuse to go back drinking again or your coffee or alcohol because that's just that's resistance. That's your addiction wanting you to do it. Do you think coffee is good for you or bad for you? Because some people say it's good for you. Some people say it's bad for you. Where are you on that?
I don't think it's good for you. I would say I like a little coffee. I might have a coffee maybe two or three times a week as a treat, but I found some really nice alternatives to coffee.
Right.
You know, like a matcha latte. I love a matcha latte or I love the, what do you call it? Like the chicory. There's a company, The Whole Earth. They make a really nice mix of chicory and barley. And it's a, you know, caffeine replacement if you want. And it's really nice as well with the plant-based milk. Things like also the mushrooms, the reishi mushrooms and all these kind of things. You can just mix, or even the cacao. You know, you use the raw cacao in some plant-based milk. That's kind of boosting, but it's a good It's a good boost. And what I was saying with the barley and the chicory, these are actually prebiotics. So they actually give, they are food for your gut, and they actually help regenerate your gut bacteria. So not only it's a replacement for coffee, but they also are really good for your gut. So that's and there's loads of other like we use coffee as a stimulant because we need to wake up. And there are some alternatives to stimulants, like things like licorice tea. That's really nice as well. And usually you would crave a coffee after work as well, or like you would with alcohol, maybe from about 3 o'clock, because, you know, it's the end of the day, you're flagging, you're still working until 5. And that's when, that's the trap then, because if you're drinking coffee at that time, you're not going to sleep later on in the night. You're not going to have a good quality sleep if you think you're sleeping.
It really surprised, never in my life have I been affected. I've never been affected by the stimulus nature of coffee. So if I drink coffee, I don't feel alert. It doesn't stop me from sleeping. I'm just one of those people. And I've never really drunk a lot of it, only because, like, when we grew up, my household was a household of tea. So nobody really drank coffee that much. Plus it tasted disgusting. Whereas a nice tea with a load of sugar when we were kids, you know, it tasted much better. But recently, well, I would say the last couple of years, I've been on and off having either coffee or decaf when I'm in Starbucks, right? So I'll go to Starbucks to work all day. I'll have at the moment, I'm having a decaf coffee. What I don't like about it, Law, is I constantly think about it. So I don't think it's my body saying you need a decaf now because you need stimulating. It's something more than that. There's something in my head that is saying to me, oh, I can't wait to go to Starbucks to have my decaf. Whereas I'm not saying in my head, I can't wait to go to the smoothie joint to have a smoothie. And I don't like that. It reminds me of, it feels like addiction.
It's an addiction to a brand, maybe. I don't like Starbucks, sorry.
No,
it's like,
well,
McDonald's,
it's
to me.
It's the only coffee shop up the road, but it's not, I don't know.
And imagine how much you're spending every time you go to Starbucks.
Oh, I'm spending
that
your 25
a month.
30. Yeah, a good $30
a week. A year. You could be going to the gym for that amount. You are going anyway.
I decided today when I go, I'm going to take a load of drinks with me. I'm going to be sneaky. I'm going to take a load of drinks with me. Law, it's been really great to have you on. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
When I get back to Cardiff in March, I'm going to check you out again. I'll see you in the market and buy some kefir off you. If you ever go to Portland, by the way, in America, they serve kombucha on tap, pints.
Yeah, so
like
I know.
It's almost like you're drinking cider.
One of my friends is going over, so I'm hoping that I'll be able to come and visit her.
I had a pint and then I stopped. I was like, this is a bit strange. This is like I'm drinking cider again. Like, I just didn't like the way it felt, but... You know, keep up the good work. I really like the way that you've gone from working your naturopathy to actually creating these products, your kefir. I've tasted it. It's absolutely fantastic. I'll put website instructions to your site so people can get hold of you if they want any advice or how to buy your products. We've got a lot of people in the UK, so they'll be able to check you out. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And is there a way we can hear this podcast?
Yes, I will. As soon as I publish it, I will send you the links and that. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Great. Thank you very much, Lee. See you again. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. And before you bugger off and go listen to someone more important than me, like Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan, I've got a few things to tell you about. First and foremost, if you really like the show, please go to your podcast platform, rate and review it. Give it a 5-star review. Tell everyone how great I am. That'll be really, really appreciative. Secondly, if you want to learn more about the work that we're doing here at 1000daysober.com, then head to that website, 1000daysober.com. You can learn how to get involved in this amazing project to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol for 1000 days and beyond, okay? Get over there, get involved. We will provide you with a tremendous support system and world-class workshop experience called the Strive Sobriety System. Okay, it's catered to hit you at all stages of this sobriety journey. So if you're like contemplating whether or not you it's right for you to stop drinking, don't worry, we've got your back. We'll hit you on that. If you've been stopped drinking for now 7 days, 8 days, and you want to make an even bigger inroads, we've got you. If you've actually stopped drinking for 3-4 years, but you still want to be amongst a community of people who don't drink alcohol and you want to enrich your life and live a fulfilled life, we've got your back as well. So get over to www.1000daysober.com, okay, and join our Strive support system. It is amazing. You will love it. If you want to follow us on social, you can find us at 1000daysober.com on Instagram and 1000daysober.com at YouTube, where you can watch all of these podcasts in the flesh rather than just listening to them. Without further ado, I'm going to shut the hell up and leave you in the capable hands of yourself. Thanks for listening.